Three, two, one. All right, Bears fans, we have a special guest for this week one matchup on Monday Night Football. My guy, Alec Lewis, who does a great job covering the Minnesota Vikings at The Athletic. Also, you got to check out his YouTube channel, The Alec Lewis Show. Honestly, Alec, you see the Nicholas Moriano show here. I got a lot of inspiration just from you. I think it was back at the Combine when we last spoke and saw each other. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do that too.
No, I think I've told a lot of people. First, thanks for having me. Pumped to be on here, especially with such a big Iowa game this weekend. I'm surprised you're not just fully locked in. No, I told people, like, I got really creative. You thought about this podcast name, settled on this very special idea to just include my name and show, just like every other person who does the job that seemingly we do did. But no, it's been very fun to, you know, be in this medium. It was something that, like, after thinking about it a while, I was like, why not talk directly to people? It's a blast to do it. And when you are as invested as we are in covering this stuff at the level that we do, like, it's fun to do it, and I've had a good time. But no, excited for this game. Kind of tired of I've talked about it for so long, and we've analyzed it from every angle, so just excited for it to get here. But no, you're once we get through this and I finish the stories, there's a haze in the barn, but here we go. Let's talk about this game.
No, I completely understand that. You can only watch so much film, hypotheticals. What if this happens? This happens. We just need Monday nights. And then again, it's Monday night. So you're going through the whole day Monday, like, we need this game to get here. But eventually it will. But I want you, Alec, to just kind of give Bears fans just an update. And starting with J.J. McCarthy, because honestly, for even me, like, there's still, I think, a lot of unknowns with this guy. It's just going to be his first career regular season start. It happens to be on Monday Night Football against an NFC North opponent. What have you witnessed from JJ McCarthy, covering him from OTAs, training camp, and now up to this point right now?
Yeah, it's been fascinating to cover it. Just to go back briefly, like, it was a wild situation last year when he tore his meniscus. It happened in the preseason game against the Raiders. Didn't even notice it until, like, the next day. Kevin O'Connell said that he had a little knee situation. And then, like, a couple days later, you're learning that he's done for the year. And it was just wild for that situation to play out the way it did. It was obviously, you know, as great as the team, great a year the team had last year, it was hard for him to just, you know, be on the sidelines for it. And so he comes back this year. And I'd say, I mean, it's just been interesting to watch him. Like, there have been very good days, and one of them that comes to mind is the Thursday of joint practices here in Minnesota against the Patriots. He carved that defense up that day, completed like 13 passes in a row, was anticipatory over the intermediate area of the field. But then there have also been days where he's booting out of the pocket, trying to make the play, throwing the ball into harm's way, and those the Vikings have viewed as teachable moments that hopefully come Monday night and into the season, he's kind of weeded out from his time in training camp. I describe it as like a little bit uneven in terms of what we saw every day. From a pre-snap perspective, the operation was great. Not a ton of penalties and hiccups. He got in and out of the huddle well. He was able to analyze and dissect pre-snap looks. The question for me, and we'll find out Monday night, is post-snap, how well does he execute? Is he reading the field well? Is he accurate with the football? Can he layer passes into windows? All of those things, as well as we've seen him do it at times and at other times while he struggled, like in this environment with the anxiety that will exist in that stadium in front of family and friends for him, it's really hard to peg it. And I just can't wait to see what happens.
That's interesting because it's kind of exactly opposite for Caleb Williams, because there's been a lot of pre-snap issues that are still kind of ongoing to this point with false starts, just things of that nature. So it's interesting to hear both quarterbacks going into year two, what they're both like in their respective systems. I'm curious, Alec, is this, again, more you kind of projecting here, but it's just kind of like a copy and paste, put JJ McCarthy in the offense that Sam Darnold ran last year, or are there going to be, you think, unique things to JJ and what he can do with his game?
Yeah, I definitely think there are tweaks. And first and foremost, it starts with them overhauling the interior of the offensive line. They drafted Donovan Jackson the first round to play left guard. They signed and paid Ryan Kelly. They signed and paid Will Fries in free agency. And then they acquired Jordan Mason and paid him after trading with the 49ers for him. And so as far as the look of this offense, for me, the differences begin with how much they prioritize the run game. I expect the rushing percentage to increase. I expect the diversity of the run game to increase. I expect the diversity of the screen game, which is an extension of the run game, to increase. So it really starts there. That just fundamentally is different. In the pass game, I also think Kevin O'Connell is very in tune to what specific quarterbacks excel at. With Sam Darnold, it was deep developing routes. His arm was phenomenal. He could layer passes very well deep down the field. JJ McCarthy might have that, and he might definitely have it in time. But what stands out to me in terms of where he really executes is the intermediate area of the field, whether it's, comebacks in the intermediate area, dagger concepts with Diggs coming over the intermediate area. Like, he hits those with ease. And so if this pass game evolves anywhere, I expect it to be more of an intermediate style passing game than kind of what last year felt like, when it was very – it felt like home runs and walks, to use a baseball analogy. Yeah. And this past game, this year, I expect it to feel more like singles, doubles, and matriculate the ball that way.
That's interesting. I like the way that you put that, because, you see, I just remember so many big plays of Justin Jefferson downfield. He's going to get it regardless. That's why I have him in my fantasy team, number four overall. But with the addition of now Adam Thielen, I think that also speaks to what you're saying about some of those base hits, as you will, because he seems like a guy that, even though he hasn't been with the team for a couple of years, seems like a guy that can bring that for the Vikings offense.
No question. He is 35 years old. And while I would say I was pretty surprised in the lead up to that acquisition happening, I looked at it a little skeptically at first of 35 year old, what is he really going to be able to provide? Then you watch the film of him in Carolina last year and the year before that, and he really does still have juice. He's still so reliable at the catch point. He's still reliable in the red zone. And so with him, with TJ Hockenson, until Jordan Addison comes back from his suspension in week four, especially, I fully expect that to be the style of offense. Now, the complication a little bit is Justin Jefferson thrives as a deep developing route runner. Like, he is a long strider, not the most, he doesn't have really any hiccups in his game, but he's not, there are times where getting off of press, the line of scrimmage, and just being shifty and quick from the outset off releasing off the line of scrimmage can be a little bit more muddy than I think sometimes you'd want. But then again, as I say that, he's great in option routes where he's has a two-way go, can pick one way or another. So I expect Adam Thielen early on to be fully engaged in this offense. It's a complex system, but he knows the bones of it. And so to have him, TJ Hockenson, Justin Jefferson, I don't think they're going to be lacking for skill talent, especially with how much they're probably going to lean into the run game Monday night.
Yeah, a lot of weapons that JJ McCarthy has it at his disposal. One last question about the offense before I turn over to defense. What are you most curious about on Monday night from JJ McCarthy, the offense in general? What are you most curious about?
Yeah, great question. The first thing is Christian Darrisaw's availability. He's the Vikings left tackle. He tore his ACL last year. I believe it was week eight on a Thursday night in Los Angeles, right before the first half ended in that game. And he has attacked the rehab unbelievably. He's been seemingly ahead of schedule at every point. He practiced a fair amount Wednesday. It was a DMP Thursday. How much of that was or is the Vikings wanting to do what they've done with him, is give him a rest day to kind of see how he recovers into Friday. Like, it'll be very interesting to see if he's available. And if he's not, that puts a great onus on Justin School, the backup signed from Tampa Bay, to hold up against Montez Sweat or Dio or whatever blitz looks that Dennis Allen's throwing at him. So that's kind of probably where I'd start, just starts with the front. And then behind that, I'm just most curious when it is first and second down and J.J. McCarthy is flush from the pocket and he's trying to make a play. In those instances where you can just throw the ball away or check the ball down, how willing is he to just move on to the next down and live to see another down, versus how much is the competitor in him in this environment wanting to show, you know, prove everything to everybody? How much is he going to try to fit balls in windows in a way where it's probably not going to be most optimal, where there is potential for tips and interceptions, stuff like that? So, like, how well does he manage the game? And I don't say that as a demeaning, derogatory, like, here's a game manager guy, but this team and this roster is so talented to where if he can minimize mistakes as much as anything else, they're probably going to be pretty successful. So that's probably what I'm most curious about. On third down, you got to let it rip. You got to make something happen. On first and second down, can you live to fight to see another down? That's a question for me.
I mean, I have that same question about Caleb Williams, Alec. Like, you saying that, I'm like, this I could copy and paste and say exactly about Caleb, because that's what he's going to have to do in Ben Johnson's offense, where it's predicated on rhythm and timing. But then you also have Caleb, who does like to try to extend plays. Even the game at Soldier Field, there are a couple of plays where he extends and they get positive plays. I'm thinking of, like, DeAndre Swift's 30-yard reception down the right sideline, but then you go back and you go into overtime. He's holding the ball, and Grenard gets him for a 12-yard sack. So that's going to – I mean, the same exact applies here, too, with Caleb Williams. So I'm really glad that you brought that up. And now just to kind of switch things on you defensively, I watched your interview with Pete Bursich and just, again, just diving into all the nitty-gritty of the film. I've been watching his film breakdowns as well. This Vikings defense – there's so much to it. There's so many things that Brian Flores does. And then you revamp it by also adding Hargrave and Jonathan Allen in the middle. What have you seen from this defense so far with these new additions under Brian Flores?
Yeah. The front seven, I said this today. We were out there probably for 25 plus days in training camp. If I tracked sacks, Jonathan Grenard might have had 35 plus over the course of training camp. It was to a level at which, as a Vikings beat writer, you're worried, is that a referendum on Justin School, the backup left tackle, or is Jonathan Grenard, who is still an ascending player, you know, has he risen to such a level at which, you know, it's just that dominant? Like, that's, you know, you start there. You have Andrew Van Ginkel, who was a second team all pro last year and does everything. Javon Hargrave, people don't really know this, but since 2021, when he's been healthy, his pressure rate is higher than Aaron Donald, Quinnen Williams, Chris Jones, and that crop of players. And he is healthy right now, and he looks great. Jonathan Allen had a serious injury last year, but he remains a vastly improved pass rusher compared to what the Vikings have had. And then, you know, you've got backups in Jalen Redmond. He's really come on. Blake Cashman and Ivan Pace are great blitzers. Dallas Turner is a former first-round pick who has looked great in training camp. So this front seven has the potential, in my opinion, to be one of, if not the best in the NFL. And they are all healthy right now going into week one. And so that is, I mean, it's where you start with everything, because, as you know, like, the game, these games are won at the line of scrimmage. Now, I do have questions. Can they stop the run as well as they have in years past? And if Ben Johnson leans into the run, how do they hold up? But from a sheer pass rush capability, this front seven is where I begin talking about this defense, because they have the potential to do very special things.
And again, that's where we're opposite in with the Vikings and Bears, because there's a lot of questions with the Bears front seven right now, even with Dio Dangmo being there, Montez Sweat, Grady Jarrett being inserted into the interior, hasn't looked great. And it's been inconsistent, but you bringing up all the guys that the Vikings have, I do want to go a little bit more in depth than Van Ginkle, because watching him on film, there's just so many things that he does, whether he's setting people up for twists, dropping back in coverage. I don't want to put this like on you, but is he like one of the most important pieces on that defense? Or if not, who is? And then if he is, what do you think, Brian? I mean, Brian Flores has just put him everywhere, and obviously it's worked.
Yeah. Van Ginkle and Josh Metellus are two guys who, I mean, they can do everything. Like, Josh Metellus lines up as a slot defender. He lines up at linebacker. He's lined up in the A gap. He's, you know, running the deep half safety. Andrew Van Ginkle is, he's on the ball, he's off the ball, he's dropping in coverage, he's setting someone up for a twist, like you said, which is absolutely true. Like, there are multiple plays on film that I forgot where Andrew Van Ginkle is like 10, 15 yards in coverage, and Caleb Williams, the arm strength was unbelievable to fit the ball into some of these windows. But like, that's Van Ginkle back there in coverage. It's like, why? How is he there? Those two guys, Metellus and Van Ginkle, kind of unlock what Brian Flores can do schematically. And so, I mean, I'm fascinated with how Dallas Turner has progressed. Do you have Andrew Van Ginkle play more off the ball? Do you have Dallas Turner off the ball and Andrew Van Ginkle's off the ball? Do you do both? Are there personnel groupings with three edge rushers and two safeties and three cornerbacks? Are there personnel groupings with two edge rushers, four safeties, one cornerback? Like, you really don't know with Brian Flores, and it's so situation specific that it makes it so tough. It's why the success Ben Johnson has had against Brian Flores over the last 2 years is as impressive to me as really anything. Like, it is a referendum for me of him being a damn good offensive coach, regardless of the talent that he's had in Detroit, which is has been an incredible amount of talent.
Yeah, Dan Orlovsky just had this tweet, or maybe it was a little bit earlier today. Ben Johnson's offense hung 122 points in four games against Brian Flores last 2 years, 16 touchdowns, and punted 14 times. And that's great that Ben Johnson's had that success. But again, that's with a Detroit Lions offense that they've had years to kind of build up to what they were when Ben Johnson was there. This is year one. It's a couple months into Caleb Williams, a revamped interior offensive line. You just named your starting left tackle not too long ago. So there's a lot of different differences that are that Detroit Lions team and what he's now dealing with this Bears team. Really quick question about just the rest of the defense. Obviously, the front seven is where the strength lies. The back end, how is that looking? The cornerback positions. I know Harrison Smith's dealing with some injuries. How's that group looking right now?
Yeah, I've described it like this. If the Vikings are at the roulette table and black, or let's just say red is pass rush and black is coverage and secondary, like, they have all the chips on pass rush. I mean, that is where, like, their bet is that pass rush can just mitigate the stress on a secondary that is very unproven outside of Harrison Smith, who I'll get to in a second, and Byron Murphy Jr. at cornerback. Like, they believe in Isaiah Rodgers, a cornerback that they acquired in free agency, who had been with the Eagles and the Colts before that. Jeff Okuda has bounced around. He's also a cornerback option, but he has not had a ton of success in the NFL and has not had an ability to stay healthy, so there's questions with him. And then at safety, Theo Jackson is now stepping into an every down role. So although there is optimism in what he can be, I mean, that's a big role to fill. Now, Harrison Smith has not practiced fully since early August with a personal health situation. That's probably as far as I'm going to go for right now. He participated in a walkthrough Wednesday. Thursday, he was a DNP. Will he play Monday night? It's a fair question to ask. I don't know the answer. I mean, the closer we get with him not practicing would make me believe that there's a chance that he does not play, and they need him for the long haul, so we shall see. And if you don't have Harrison Smith, the most experienced guy on the back end, you have lost a major piece of the communication hub to a defense that checks a ton at the line of scrimmage. They also lost Cam Bynum in free agency. So you're working with an entire, potentially, if Harrison's not playing, an entirely new system. Can they communicate in that environment that is going to be raucous? And then will it even matter if the pass rush is getting to Caleb quick enough? Like, those are elements of this game that are going to be very interesting to watch and could potentially, like, with Rome, with DJ Moore, with Zacchaeus, like, I mean, like, if Caleb has time and he can read out the field and he's accurate, like, there could be some big hits available to Ben Johnson, and then you'll be sitting there Tuesday morning watching Get Up and them talking about how much of a sorcerer Ben Johnson is. Like, that just is it's a possibility with what happens Monday night.
Yeah, no, I mean, can the Vikings pass rush get home? If it does, I have a feeling it's going to be a long day for Caleb Williams and company. If it doesn't, there's a lot of possibilities out there. But here, Alec, before I, you know, don't want to keep you too long, and obviously there's football going on right now, can't let you get out of here without telling me how you think this Bears game is going to go. Monday Night Football, J.J. McCarthy's first start. We just talked about offense, defense. How do you see it going?
Yeah, I'm going to be a homer and say the Vikings win the game. I do think it might be fairly low scoring. I was going over scores with you beforehand. Whether it's 24-20, 20-17, I kind of expect it to be pretty close. I think field position this is maybe like an old school, tackling field position. But like, I really think special teams field position has a chance to really shift this game. The Vikings have an inexperienced returner on both, Miles Price, an undrafted rookie, returning kicks, returning punts. How does he produce? From a punt perspective, Ryan Wright has not been great over the last 2 years, and they're rolling with him again. Kicker Will Reichard started great last year, kind of tailed off at the end of last season. How does he look with those elements? Like, if the Vikings lose the game and special teams is a major culprit, I'm not going to be sitting there surprised because of watching how the Vikings have conducted their special teams group. But I just have enough faith in Brian Flores' ability to craft a plan and in Kevin O'Connell's ability to position J.J. McCarthy in optimal circumstances to where I'll pick the Vikings. But like I said earlier, I have the utmost respect for Ben Johnson. Will it look great on night one? Will there be overreactions if it doesn't? Of course. But for me, like, to have this guy for the long haul, if I were a Bears fan, just having watched this guy the last couple of years, I would feel very positive about it.
Yeah, no, I mean, those are really good points there, Alec. And, you know, the last game at Soldier Field came down to special teams. They had a blocked field goal. There was a muff punt by the Bears, there's 10 points right there that went in the Vikings.
It always feels like, I mean, you're hearing they're resodding the grass. And I just start to get in that mode where I'm like, what if the punt return slips and it's a muff? And like, I mean, you know, just like I do, turnovers end up swaying a lot of these games. So it's going to be a blast. I don't know how I'm going to pass the time Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then all of Monday to get there, but we'll do it somehow.
We'll do it somehow. Well, Alec, I appreciate you joining this show to give all Bears fans that in-depth knowledge of the Minnesota Vikings. I'll see you in the press box at Soldier Field, which for what should be a really fun matchup. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Nicholas Moriano Show. Everyone, thank you for tuning in, hanging out, and we'll see you next time. Oh. Alec, you're the man, my dude.
Yeah, that was fun. That was fun.
Appreciate it, dude. Yeah. Whew, man, I've been battling a fucking cold these past 2 days. I was at a wedding, the best man in the wedding.
That'll get you. That'll get you.
I didn't feel anything the next day, and then 2 days later, it just hit me.
It happens. As long as you're good for Monday night.
That's all that matters.
No, I'm going to be, my voice, I've got to do a radio thing tomorrow morning from 9 to noon. So if I can from a voice perspective, if I can just make it to Saturday where I'm sitting on my couch watching the Iowa defense, I'll be fine, but, we'll see.
Alec, so Iowa, did you go to our,
no, I just know you went there, right? But no, I, yeah, I, yeah, yeah. big college football guy. So
okay,
that's really. I went to Mizzou. They play Kansas. I'll be watching that. But,
got it. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds good, man. Well, hey, appreciate you for hanging on.
No problem.
Jumping on here, and I'll see you on Monday night, my dude.
Sounds good. Is it uploaded and everything good?
Yeah, so it should be good to go. Let's
okay.
See, let me do that.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.